And so at this point, we were kind of smoking a little weed, dabbling in that. And I said, hey, that entrepreneurial spirit kicked in. I said, if I'm going to smoke it, I might as well sell it.
Welcome to The Superhuman Life. I'm your host, Frank Rich, and this is the only podcast in the world dedicated to helping men break free from the shackles of addiction through the power of faith and fitness. It is our goal with every episode to help you take back control and rebuild your body, mind, and spirit. And we do so by bringing you real and raw conversations with people just like you, aiming to find their place in this world while dealing with the everyday struggles and battles that we all face. Now, it is my belief that we were all created for a specific purpose. And if we can harness that belief or faith, then take control of our mind and body or fitness, then we can ultimately create the life that we've always dreamed about, our own superhuman life. I want to let you know how grateful and blessed I am to have you here with me today. Let's get on to today's show. Have you ever found yourself trapped by your own internal prisons? If you're listening to this episode right now and you are a human, then I know for a fact that you've dealt with feelings of fear, possibly doubt, maybe even have suffered from anxiety or depression at some point within your life. Well, our guest today is no stranger to both internal and external prison walls. After battling with drug addiction, anxiety, greed for years, he found himself facing some serious time. After a series of bad decisions, he was facing 4 years behind prison walls. And it was in those times, just like with every single episode that we've had up until this point, it was in those darkest times that he found his greatest purpose. I'm incredibly honored and truly blessed to have with me today, Eric Salzenstein. Eric, like I said, lived a life of drug addiction, anxiety, greed, and he is very open and transparent in sharing his story. But like I said, it was in those darkest times, facing 4 years in prison, that he was able to find his greater purpose and a truer calling. It was behind these prison walls when Eric started to dig really deep into personal development. Something that I've shared a lot on my journey has been a big part of my life, has been a big part of every single life that we've shared and every journey that we've shared throughout these episodes. But Eric really dove deep into development. We share the two books that he gives credit to really causing a paradigm shift in him, both in him internally and also externally as well. We talk about those books and I kind of share my past with them as well. And we kind of talk about it on a bigger picture and how it ties into understanding your purpose and having something greater than yourself that you're living for, but then how you can actually implement and execute every single day to fulfill that calling, to fulfill that purpose. And Eric's story is just smothered with these principles and these tools. We talk about what he's doing now and how he's leading people from the stage. Eric is a very well-known and sought-after speaker, both to schools, to children, and to adults. And we talk about how he's ended up there and how he's really impacting people through some of his coaching and through his speaking. He's very well-known for his talk, From Prison to Prosperity. And that's the theme of this entire episode is we want to share his story. We want to share his struggles. But ultimately, we want to give Eric the opportunity to share with you the tactics and the tools that he's used to go from that life of greed, anxiety, addiction, to having real impact in this world. And I think that's the real takeaway here is it doesn't matter where you've been, what you've gone through, the life that you've struggled with, either internally or externally, as in Eric's case, living behind prison walls. And then having to break free from that and finding his purpose in impacting and helping others. So incredibly blessed, honored to be sharing this episode with you guys today. Without further ado, From Prison to Prosperity and Purpose with Eric Salzenstein. Love you guys.
Eric Salzelstein. I want to make sure I get that right. Is that correct, brother?
Close, man. Saul Zinstein.
Saul Zinstein. Okay.
Yeah. No points deducted.
I got the easy name. It's two syllables. Frank Rich. People confuse it with first and last all the time. But Eric, brother, I appreciate you jumping on here today with me, man. I know we were chatting just for a minute before hitting record, but it's crazy. This podcasting world, like what it's opened up to me in terms of relationships and connections. We have a lot of similarities in our past. We have a lot of similarities in the people that we know. And ultimately why I have you here today and what I'm excited about jumping into is the similarities between, what we're trying to accomplish in the world. So first and foremost, brother, appreciate you. Grateful to have you here with me. So welcome to the Two Proven Life, Eric.
Yeah, Frank, I appreciate you, man. And I love what you, how you just opened up, and we can drop something right now. We're talking about relationships. Big question out there is, what type of relationships are you invested in, right? To all the listeners right now, what type of relationships are you investing your time and your energy in? And for you, you've realized that this podcast is a great way for you to connect with some awesome people who are helping you move the needle in your life and in your business. And I love it, man. So you're taking some huge action here. This is what you said, episode 11, right?
This will be episode 11. We hit a little hiccup in kind of our production over the last, 3 weeks or so. Just getting a lot of things kind of transitioned, in work-life balance, et cetera. But yeah, episode 11, the feedback has been incredible. And I know we're going to rock it again today because you're bringing an incredible story. You're bringing an incredible mission. And that's what this show is ultimately about. But yeah, man, touching on the relationship side of things, that's been a key component in every single episode. Is your, call it your circle of influence, call it your network, call it your mastermind group, whatever it is. Every single person that we have on this show that's living a superhuman life, in some way, their story goes back to the people that they are investing. And that's a key word that you said is investing, because you can ultimately do two things with your time. You can spend it, which gives you no return back, or you can invest it in investing your time in other people that are breathing into you life, that are feeding into your soul, into what you're doing. Ultimately is going to be where you, you become your greatest self and, fulfill your true purpose. So, I know you're driven by your purpose now. I know you're doing incredible things with your rock formula, for development, speaking on stages around the world. So I want to get all to that stuff, because that's where, I think the real transformation is going to happen for people. And obviously we're going to get you connected and, share places for people to find you. But, you've lived an incredible journey, and it wasn't always this prosperity. You've had to break free from a lot of challenges in your life. So, I think ultimately, what I want to get out of today is let's share your story, because, it's one that started off, very promising, in your early age. I've heard it, but I want people to hear it today from your mouth. So
sure.
Yeah, man. Yeah. We'll kind of lead you to what you have doing today with your speaking foundation and your coaching business. But, breaking free from prison walls, breaking free from your own prison inside. I think that's where I want to walk people through, because I think there's so much that we can take away from your story. So yeah, man, if you kind of want to, open us up and, maybe take us back to, maybe the points in your life when, things started to maybe take the wrong direction, or even slightly before that, lead us into, when maybe you started to make a few of the wronger decisions that ultimately led you to where you were incarcerated, and et cetera, and all the trials and tribulations you had to go through, during that time.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's been quite a journey. I think that's the big word that you throw out there. And see, for me, I remember so vividly being in that courtroom. And, I had gotten into some trouble here and there in the earlier years, but I was facing life in prison. Mm. And I was at a whole nother level at this point. And to see the judge looking down at me, to feel, chills, just goosebumps running down my arms. I'm wearing a big blue jumpsuit, shackles running from my ankles up to my wrist, around my waist. Like, it was the real deal. And, it was this moment, because I knew I was about to lose my freedom. Mm. But the truth is, And what I found out is I had lost my freedom long before that day in the courtroom. And what I discovered is that we can be in prison without physically being in prison. You know, we can be chained down by our addictions and destructive habits. You know, we can be restricted by our fears and insecurities. Yeah. We can be trapped by our limiting beliefs and a negative mindset. These are things that can hold us back, that can hold us down, and can limit any growth, any potential, because they're vices. And if we don't recognize them, if we don't acknowledge them, if we don't start moving through them, we stay in this repetitive process, getting the same results, and we're frustrated and wondering why. And so for me, going way back again, because I said, you know, I realized like, that wasn't when I lost my freedom. No, it was long before. And it was, you know, growing up suburban Orlando, Florida, great family, good home. You know, my mom, she taught me God. My dad, he taught me sports. Two younger sisters. I was an all-star basketball player. I played baseball as well, soccer. I mean, was heavy into sports. And, you know, to be going, and it's just a, you know, a normal, you know, I'm putting the quotations up right now, but like a normal life. And so it's like, how does everything change? And how do you get to that place where you're facing life? And like, how does that happen? Like, how could I have made such decision, like one decision after another, that was a compounding effect that brought me to that place? And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with insecurities at the base of it. I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, wanting to be somebody that I truly wasn't, you know, wanting to stand out and fit in and basically do whatever I had to do that for my peers, to be accepted, to be wanted, to be cool, you know? And you know, when I speak to high schools and middle schools, that's a big message I have here, is that it's not being weird, like being unique. That's a really cool thing later on in life. But as a kid, it's not like that. You know, as a kid, you look to the one guy who's like, he's the leader of the, you know, I gotta be like him. And if you're not like him, you're not cool. Everybody goes to be like this one image. And then the girls, they're on their journey, facing similar challenges. And so it's a weird space. And I think growing up, I really struggled with that. And I could just like the big difference while I was going through, grade school. I went to a Catholic school here in Orlando from first grade to seventh. I got asked not to return, come back eighth grade year, but that's all. Yeah, they, sister, I won't drop her name, but a nice little nun lady. That's the typical like the way that you see it in the films. Like she was the principal. She asked me not to come back. I had gotten some fights, but the fighting factor for me was that I like sports, and I liked, at that time I was listening to like rap music, hip hop, where most of the guys in the class were into skateboarding and liked rock music. So there was this big gap, and I got bullied and picked on. I wasn't the biggest guy, and I got in a lot of fights. And I mean, I had friends, you know, but it was always touch and go. It was never like real good, you know, friendships and relationships. And so I think that kind of set the tone moving through, going from grade school to middle school and then high school. And I had an entrepreneurial spirit from the start, selling candy and CDs, and was driven by, like, I guess, wanting more. And I think a little bit of that also was wanting to stand out, right? Like you got the newest candies, you got the newest CDs you're downloading from LimeWire and Napster and all that stuff. And coming into school. And so that allowed me to kind of get that center of attention. And so when you go into high school, now ninth grade, selling candy and CDs isn't really cool anymore. And you know what I mean? That's not the ticket. And so at this point, now I'm kind of losing, I don't have that light on me anymore. Now I'm that small, I'm still playing sports, and sports is definitely my outlet, but it's just not getting me the social, the what I want socially. It's,
did you, know, you- did you identify as an athlete in school? Like, was that, I mean, were you known in the circles like Eric's, like he's an athlete, or like, were you maybe looking for that something else to attach on to? Because ultimately, yeah, like you didn't have that identity.
That's a really good question. I think in grade school, like going up to seventh grade, where I was definitely like the star basketball player at my school, in sixth and seventh grade. I don't think I would say I was an athlete because I was more focused. I mean, people definitely knew that I played sports, but I think there just wasn't enough buzz to label me as an athlete. Like that wasn't the big thing. It was social, especially at a private Catholic school. I think the social dynamics were almost more important than the sports were.
Got it.
And then when I went into public school for eighth grade and then public school for high school, that's when I started getting out of sports. In ninth grade, like I said, from my dad, he taught me sports. He was my coach. I was on multiple traveling teams. I broke his heart when I quit, man. And in ninth grade, I threw in the towel. I said, I'm done playing sports. I'm done playing basketball. I think I just wanted to focus on developing more friendships, or again, I cared so much about what everybody in school like thought about me, and I wanted to be cool. And so at this point we were kind of smoking a little weed, dabbling in that. And, I said, hey, that entrepreneurial spirit kicked in. I said, if I'm going to smoke it, I might as well sell it. And that way I'll be the guy. Ninth grade. Yeah. I started selling in. Yeah. And I mean, I had sold a few little bags here and there in eighth grade year when I started. But ninth grade is when I went all in, and I made a decision, and I decided to be the best suburban drug dealer I could possibly be, as sad and misguided as that is, and with no need to do it. You know, I wasn't hurting family, like I didn't need to, but that was the decision I made at that time. So, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, wow. So I guess, maybe looking at this now, like, you're speaking at schools and you're talking to kids, like, in different grades, like what are your messages for them? Like you found this source of, outside identity, through your entrepreneurship, spirit. But ultimately, it got you into doing some troubling things. But as you're talking with kids nowadays, like, I don't think we're gonna have a lot of kids listening to this, right? But like we're gonna have a lot of parents. Sure. So if they're starting to see some of these tendencies where kids are looking outside of themselves, in terms of identity, like what message are you giving to kids today, or what message are you giving to parents, keep them from, going down these same paths?
So for me, when I stopped sports, cause it was an outlet, it became all about like that, again, the social dynamics. That's what everything was about. School was about that. And so for me, a big message I have for the kids and for parents is trying new things, getting involved in different activities. And I ended up getting involved pretty heavily in wakeboarding, where we got lakes all over the place here in Orlando, behind the boat. And then we had a cable park where the cable pulls you around and they got the different ramps. And I mean, I loved it. And that could have been a saving grace for me if I would have really stayed in it but I think I was just too far gone. By that time I had already, by the time I got into that, I was already a year and a half to 2 years into selling, and I was pretty I was setting the roots. But yeah. I think I tell parents, it's like, challenge your kid and encourage them and take them, let's get involved in some different stuff outside of school. See what likes that, see what interests and see what, pops up for them, and see, hey, I really enjoy this. I like going to these art things. I like going to these acting classes. I like going to these lessons. I like taking jujitsu, whatever the case is. Like finding those different outlets, I think, is a huge thing, because it brings back that uniqueness and that, okay, I'm an individual and I like this. And although my friends aren't involved in this, I'm okay because I really enjoy this. And maybe one of my friends or a couple of my friends will get involved. But I think that's a big, and I think that goes for all areas of life, is having different things that make you stand out and make you feel good. It doesn't matter that your friends or peers aren't doing them. If it's something that's adding to your life, if hot yoga once a week is adding to your life and it fills you up and you leave that class feeling great, you got to continue doing that. That's a productive outlet that's going to keep you in a power state. And so you got to find those outlets.
Amen. I agree 100%. I think it's so easy nowadays, you know, for adults and or, you know, parents to, adults can just get themselves trapped inside of technology. You know, we have unlimited TV, we have unlimited, you know, reach on the internet to find interest, to find things to consume our time. But just like you're saying, like we're given these unique interests, we're given these unique talents or things that we, you know, we want to get involved in for a reason. So, you know, chasing your uniqueness and chasing your own, you know, likeness, for the purpose of ultimately like becoming the greatest version of yourself. So 100% agree with, you know, with that statement there. So, all right. So you're past this, the stage of, you know, sports in high school, you're dabbling in, you know, a little bit of marijuana selling, you know, kind of feeding your entrepreneurship spirit. You know, people are gonna say not a big deal. You know what, like a little bit of marijuana here and there, like that's not that major of a problem. But you know, I know the story like goes a little bit deeper, sure. And there's a lot more that you go through. So, you know, continue on, kind of take us to where, you know, you ultimately led you to, you know, facing some serious time.
Yeah.
How that kind of transpired.
So the weed just kept picking up, and all through high school, I basically started branching out. I got some other schools involved. I had, two other schools that I was, that had people at that I was selling to. I got people underneath me that started to sell. So I had, basically was like building a pyramid, you know what I mean? Like, a network marketing thing going on here. And, so yeah, I just built this thing up, and it ended up turning into we had a pill epidemic that swept through Florida, big documentary called the OxyContin Express. That was a big one that was produced basically telling that story. And so doctor shopping, which is basically going from doctor to doctor with, you know, some MRIs, and these dirty doctors were just writing scripts of you know, a lot of painkillers, right? You get you'd have the opiates and then the Xanax and then the muscle relaxers, and you'd walk out and you'd have like a goodie bag. And so I was introduced to this, and I knew nothing about this game, but I looked at the numbers. So I did the math, and I was like, wow, this is crazy. And I said, okay, yeah, I'm going to get involved. And so in 2009, so this is the year after my I graduated in 08. Okay. Was a graduating year. So 09 is when I started this, and I dove in and basically started as just selling these things along with the weed, and then I ended up using them. So I became addicted, and I was using, I mean, heavily, just every single day. I depended on these things to move, to operate, and it became a part of my life. My every decision revolved around either picking up or selling drugs. You know, I lived for my phone and by my phone. Mm.
Was this your first kind of taste or experience of addiction, or had you, you know, throughout high school, like you probably weren't aware of it, but like looking back now, could you trace your, you know, addictive traits either in yourself early on, or is that even something within your family? I think one thing we found very common in, you know, in a lot of our guests is like, the environment that you're coming from. So, you know, I don't want to go too deep into, you know, like the family history, but looking back now, like, could you see characteristics and traits of addiction prior to that, or was that kind of the moment when it really took
control? Yeah. So my for me personally, you know, I smoked weed all through high school. They put me on Ritalin in second grade. So second grade, they diagnosed me with ADD and ADHD. They put me on Ritalin, then Strattera, and I was on Adderall by like sixth grade, I think, something like that. And I was on Adderall all through high school. So from like sixth grade to high school, they're pumping me with amphetamines. Yeah. I mean, you can't sit here and tell me giving a kid amphetamines is not going to create some sort of chemical imbalance in his, you know, in his head. So, do I blame that on them, or do I say this is all because of that? Absolutely not. But I do think that has something to do with it. It's part of the story. For me, I definitely, chasing some sort of high was always part of my journey. Chasing a high was always part of my journey. Whether it was weed, whether it was pills, you know, we didn't have any in the family. The one thing that stood out for my family was my dad was a big gambler. And, you know, he's battled that's his story. And he, lot of ups and downs with that, and it, never any drugs, never any drinking problems, but it was gambling for him. And so for me, it was selling and doing drugs. And I got the high from selling and the risk and the money. And then I got the high from using. And so when the pills got in the mix, the money increased, the risk increased, the high increased. And I mean, I was a full blown addict to these things, and, everything revolved around, chasing those different highs. And, we ended up, cocaine came in the mix. And you know, these were my medications. Like I used one to go to sleep at night, one to help me get up and focus on the next day and what I had to do. And it was just this vicious, vicious cycle. And so, basically 2013, so we got 9, 10, 11, 12. We got four and a half years of this or so. So late 2012 to early 13, everything came crashing down. And basically, I set up another drug dealer. Ended up, it was an armed robbery that was labeled, detectives labeled it as a drug deal gone bad. And so I was arrested for that charge. And in Florida, that's punishable by life since it's an armed robbery. And wow. So obviously I bit off way more than I could chew. I had no idea what was going to happen, through a series of events and going to court for about a year or whatnot, a little under a year. They basically cut me a break. It was my first time catching a felony charge. So that held a lot of weight in the court's eyes. It was my first time like looking at serious time. So the minimum amount of time you can get for that charge, the minimum, if you're found guilty, is 3 years. So I was offered 4 years, and took that plea and went ahead and started my journey. And that's when I entered prison. And this is where, you know, this is where the story of, hey, your challenges and your adversity and your mistakes are not there to hurt you. They're not there to hold you down. They're 100% there to serve you. And that's probably the biggest takeaway. If I were to, I mean, there's a lot, and I've looked, there's, you know, going into the coaching strategies and all these different, but if I were to say the biggest takeaway from all this is that your mistakes that you've made in your life are 100% there to serve you if you choose to look at it that way. And if you choose to grab the gold that's there, you know, for you.
Yeah. Is this something that you knew at that moment? I mean, here you are, you know, early 20s, you know, 4 years, you know, just 4 or 5 years fresh out of school, like probably at the time, like you're living a life, like, you know, in your eyes, at least, you know, trapped inside of, you know, your addiction, trapped inside of everything that you have going on. Like you have to believe that you're invincible. So did you instantly feel that sense? I mean, here you are facing 4 years in prison. Like, what's going on inside of your head at that particular moment?
Yeah. So I remember being on a phone call with my dad in county jail. And I said, Pops, I said, whatever they want to give me, this is what I want. I said, I want to change, man. I'm sick of living like this. I'm sick of being addicted to a pill or to a substance. And I remember saying, I said, listen, whatever God wants me to do, whatever time God wants me to have to change my life, that's what I want to do. I don't want to do a day earlier or a day later. And a couple weeks later, I got offered the 4 years, took it. So now I'm going into prison. And remember, now I wanted to change, right? See, we have these intentions. We want to lose the weight. We want to gain the muscle. We want to get the promotion. We want to start the business. We want to write the book. We want to launch the podcast. We have these intentions. But if we don't have a blueprint, if we don't have a roadmap, if we don't have a clear plan in order to get there, we end up reverting back to what we know. We end up staying in where we're at because it's comfortable. And that's just what we do. We will avoid the pain of figuring it out because this current place is comfortable. We've figured out vices. We've figured out justifications. We've figured out different things to just basically allow us to stay here comfortably. And so for me, when I started this journey, I wanted to change, but I didn't know how. And so when I went into prison not knowing how, what I basically ended up doing was I reverted back to what I knew, because I didn't know how to create this new change. I went back to what I knew. So now I'm talking about what I was doing beforehand on the streets, how much I was selling. I was trying to connect with them on that level. I was basically just moving like they were. And I wasn't trying to create something different at this point. I didn't know how to create something different. And so the first 6 months of my prison sentence were completely wasted. Selling I was smoking CDs. I was I was smoking cigarettes, selling cigarettes, you know, glorifying my past, my time before prison. And at the 6 month mark, I ended up getting in a fight and kind of snapped out of it almost like, yo, I was like, Eric, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? You're going to throw this entire thing away. You're going to come out the same person, if not worse, if you don't change. And it's like, for everybody who's listening right now, how are you going to feel if a year from today, so next October, 2020, how are you going to feel if you're in the exact same place that you're in right now, getting the same results? Well, that right there, to me, because I was thinking to myself, if I don't do something, I'm going to come out 3.5 years later, the same person. And that scared me, man. And so at that point, I reached out to my brother. He's a high performance coach. He's a Stanford graduate, top 100 in the world at one point, tennis professional. Wow. Golden sheep, or what is it? Golden child, black sheep. We've got a story in itself, man. But I reached out to him and said, Jeff, I need your help, man. And he says, I know you want it. He's like, I'm going to help you. We started coaching calls from that point on. And that's where everything started to change for me. That's where I started to dive into this new way of thinking and new approach to life.
Got it. Yeah. So I know a lot of people out there are thinking, though, Eric, I don't have a high performance coach as a brother. And yes, I 100% agree that like change can be scary. It can be challenging. Like the fear living inside of people, is what prevents them from getting started, and not just getting started, but remaining consistent, because change doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen over the course of a week. It's something that takes, depending upon what you're trying to change in your life, it can take weeks, months, in your case, probably years, because you're facing now 3.5 more years. So what's a piece of advice for somebody out there that are like, dude, I don't have a brother that's accomplished all this. I'm stuck here. I got nobody around me right now. Like there's nobody in my circle that I can reach out to. Like what would be a piece of advice for them to face that fear of ultimately making a change? Like how can we guide them to get them started here?
Man, firing off a couple things right now from those questions. But I mean, like one of the first things that comes to my mind is like, you weren't in my circle and look what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
And all these people, mentors, people I've worked alongside, people are on the same level, people that I had no business being in the same room with and rubbing shoulders with. I mean, no business, light years ahead of me, were more than willing to chat with me and talk to me and give me perspective. And so you can tell me and give me all the excuses in the world, but if you want to, I mean, let's just go social media. Use social media the way that it's supposed to be, in my opinion. Use it to help you. Don't get lost on stories and feeds. I call it getting lost. You get lost on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Snap, whatever you're doing. Like you're letting it use, you're not using it as the tool that it is. It's using you. And you're just getting, you're basically checking out of your problems, checking out of your life and going into and observing, but not doing anything about it. See, reach out to somebody, send the DM, send the message. When I was first getting on podcasts, like I created a basic script message of who I am, a little bit about, I mean, like a tiny tidbit of my story and what my intention was ultimately to help them to add value to their show, to their audience. And I sent that to, I just kept resending. And it's the same thing now. If I'm trying to connect with somebody, let's say a coach of any sort, I may send 10 different DMs out to 10 different people just to open up and start the conversation. Same thing if I'm looking for a new client, a prospect or someone, if I'm looking for a client or whatever the case is, if I see it's about those just taking action and just reaching out. You have no idea what's going to happen. You have no idea where that person's heart is. You might have 9 people tell you that they need money down, they can't help you, but you may have one person that's willing to spend time with you no charge, and give you the exact perspective, give you the exact quote, give you the exact line of this action step that you need to do that's going to completely change the game for you.
100%.
So, yeah.
I 100% agree. And I mean, that's, you know, that's been the launch of this podcast. And that's been, I mean, the mission from the beginning was like just connecting with people, sharing a story, and ultimately being, you know, being vulnerable. So if in doing that, if you, as you're going through these stages of reaching out literally from your couch, you can just sit there and connect with people around the globe. Like you said, I mean, we're
in
the most incredible time to be connected to the world around us. So use that tool that you have available to you. Okay. So here you are, you're at this moment, 6 months into, you know, your stint, you're facing 3.5 more years ahead of you. You're reaching out to your brother and say, hey, now it's time to make some change. And he's buying into you. He's ready to invest and feed into you. So what kind of things do you guys start working on? What are some of the changes that you start making? Because I know it's starting within yourself. You know, you're not where you're at today if you didn't make some real transformation inside. So, you know, what did you guys start to work on, and what were some of the, you know, the real takeaways that ultimately led you to transforming, getting on stages, running workshops, creating, you know, the Rock program and everything that you're doing now? Cause I know it all started at that moment with your brother.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. And I think a lot of it just has to do, I have a quote that I say is small steps create huge momentum, and take it one step further than that, and in turn can create huge change. But it goes back down to the small steps. And so we tend to overthink things. You know, we don't know how it's going to pan out. We don't know how we're going to get to the end results. And so that will keep us from moving. That will, again, that's one of the things that will keep us in our same place, that place of comfort, but just taking one step. And so it started with reading books. It started with, I mean, you know, look at Ty Lopez. He's famous for, look at my garage. Well, first look at my Lamborghini, but now let's look at my bookshelf and all these books. And there's, you know, I don't know if he's read as many as, or is, I know he's like known for a book a day or something. Like, I don't know what the stats are there, but like, you have to just take some sort of action. For me, it really was the books were the first action step. And so I was averaging a book a week and taking notes. And then it went into journaling and
Go ahead. Any key books at that moment, you know, obviously always looking for nuggets that we can share.
Yeah.
So anything, any few that really stood out and, you know, really made change and transformation. I'm standing in front of three bookshelves myself. So I'm an avid reader and I'm 100% buying into that. But yeah, so anything that really, you know, jumped out to you and really responsible for change.
My first two books were Timothy Ferris, The 4-Hour Workweek.
Okay.
And more on the business side. And Tony Robbins, Awaken the Giant Within. And you know what's so funny? Man, this is the first time I've actually put this two and two together. So Tony Robbins, Awaken the Giant Within, definitely more of like the life coaching and you know, we're like setting the base, the values and all that good stuff, right? The stuff that you have to have in place to even run a successful business, in my opinion.
Yep.
But so you have that. Timothy Ferris is like, that's the business book. Like he's not going into it's a completely different, but now you look at where I'm at and all the coaches listening. I mean, I know everyone can relate to this, how your coaching business kind of shifts based off of where you're at, how you're showing up for your clients and the problems that you're solving for them, like what they need from you. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm starting to go into the business coaching, which is, it fills me up, man. I'm passionate about it. But the life coaching, working with primarily men, has been in place for a little over 6 months, about 9 months now. And so going back, I'm just realizing this, the first two books, business and more of the life coaching, and now we go 2 years and 3 months later since getting out of prison. And we're almost on that same, you know, the same path now with the businesses.
I love it. And it's funny you brought up those two books. I have them both sitting on the shelf over here over my right corner. They're on two different kind of shelves because I had things separated. But what I get away from that, it's super powerful. I saw Gary Vee speak a few weeks ago in New York City. I was at an agency event up there, and you know, he shares a lot about clouds and dirt, you know, clouds kind of understanding big picture. So for you, it would have been the, you know, the Awaken the Giant, the big picture, the belief system inside. Yes. And then dirt is like the tactic, the tactics, the day-to-day, you know, implementation of the task required to get you to where you are, or the automation of the 4-hour work.
There you go.
Putting the business
into
place. So I shared something on my IG, a few weeks back about the tactics alone aren't enough. So without, you know, the 4-hour work week, great book, but without the belief inside of yourself, things that you would learn from Awaken the Giant, the tactics aren't going to get you to the ultimate destiny.
They go hand in hand.
Yeah,
for sure. No,
incredible. Like I love that. Those were the two that, you know, really kind of stood out because I mean, yeah, they're on my shelf and, you know, avid reader here. So, okay. So you're diving into books, self-development, you're working with your brother. How does that start to change your life and change what you have going on, in prison? Cause I know some real transformation really took place there.
Yeah. So the big turning point for me was when I joined Gavel Club. It's an offshoot of Toastmasters International. Okay. Basically, I was going up in any class they offered, just to get out of the dorm and get in something positive, I was there. I ended up actually helping in the English department with helping other inmates get their GEDs. There was this thing where it said Gavel Club, like public speaking. Yeah. And I had never done anything remotely even close to public speaking besides being a class clown, that's about it. So this was an opportunity. I said, you know what? Why not? Let's do it. Like and this is how I base a lot of my decisions now. Is it in alignment with my values? Is this decision in alignment with my mission? Is this decision in alignment with my vision? And if the answer is yes, most likely it's going to be a good decision to take action on that. And so this was in alignment with everything I had going on. And I said, let's go. So I went and I gave the icebreaker, which is like the first first speech, 4 to 6 minutes about yourself. And I did it and I loved it, man. I loved it. And basically from there, I took off, kept speaking at our club at the prison I was at, ended up winning the contest that the winner went on to speak at another contest against two other prisons. So yeah, go ahead.
No, is this a common thing? Like I'm a Toastmaster. It's something, you know, I was avid about doing very early on. You know, I started to produce content online, and then the minute I saw my first video, I was like, dude, you're not good at speaking and delivering a message. So I jumped right into Toastmasters. I've gone through the icebreaker, the full, you know, 10 speech course. I participated in a few contests. So is this something that's common inside of prisons? Like are all of them, you know, hosting these Gavel clubs? I've never heard of this.
Yeah. So in Florida, it's pretty common. I can't speak for other states. In Florida, we have what's called Gavel Club. It's fairly common. You have to have a sponsor come in and take you through the curriculum. Yeah. Okay. And it's the same. You walk out I got my CCs and CLs. And so you can use that you can take it from prison and then go into a real Toastmasters. Yeah. It's all, accredited. So, I ended up going, we all got in the van, we went to the other prison and we had actually the Tallahassee, Democrat came and we had news, we had media there. We had about 100 people, 100, 150, somewhere in that ballpark in the audience. So my biggest audience yet. And I shared my speech and I ended up placing second in this contest. But it was an incredible experience. And I got published in that local newspaper while in prison. And that was a huge win. And from there, after getting back on our compound, we were setting up events. We were bringing in the chapel band. We were having positive raps. The band was doing their thing. I'd speak. We'd have different speakers that would come in. And we were running events for the compound for any inmates who wanted just more, who wanted to talk about growth, who wanted to talk about change, who wanted to just kind of get outside the day-to-day life of being in prison, it can be treacherous. And so we were doing some really cool things on that compound, gratitude 5K runs around the rec yard. And that was the start without knowing what a mastermind was, without knowing what any of these things were that we're functioning in now. I ran a John Maxwell 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. I ran that mastermind in the dorm for 21 weeks. So I mean, like I was involved in this stuff before I knew what it was because in my heart, it felt right. It was like, yeah, we need to, let's go, let's do more. And so when I got out, it was basically like, let's hit the ground running. Right. So.
Amazing. Incredible. Yeah. I've never, I've never heard of anything around. I mean, I know that there's certain books that are really big, kind of like, you know, within prison inmates. I know Robert Greene is an author that's a lot of times read. And I mean, many people that come out of prison and talk about, you know, their time spent, if they've really invested it the right way. But it's incredible. You were kind of doing this stuff that nowadays, like I think in our circle is very, very common, but had to have been possibly groundbreaking at the moment. So, okay. So you're running all these workshops, masterminds, personal development. How do you, you know, get through the 4 years and then take that and transition that into, you know, coaching business, consulting business? Like here you are, like, you know, you're a felon, like prison inmate. Like,
yeah.
Like, yep. Yeah, you've read some books. I've read a lot of books too. You know what I mean? Like how have you now taken this to where you've ultimately like helped, you know, men around the world and have, you know, transitioned into speaking stages all over the world? I think, you know, like there's obviously something that, you know, is very, you know, very key in how you transitioned into what you have today.
Absolutely. So, I mean, this definitely goes back to the first thing that you said, which is the networking and relationships. Hmm. You have to be a professional at building relationships if you're an entrepreneur. You have to be somebody who is constantly looking to connect with not just people, but the right people. And the big thing that I say is lead with adding value. Since day one, I've always, my heart has always said, go into every situation trying to figure out how I can add value to them, because in turn, most likely it's going to benefit me. So like, cause obviously like we need to make sure we're taking steps to grow, right? So mm-hmm. It's not being selfish, but you have to be careful of how much time you're giving out and where you're at, you know, the things that you're doing. But if you if you're always leading with adding value, especially if that action that you're doing is in alignment with your mission, vision, and values, then it's most likely going to be a good way. It's going to be a win-win, most likely.
So Eric, understanding, you know, that you need to lead with value, and it's got to be built around, you know, your mission, vision, and values. But, you know, knowing that people are struggling with change, struggling with identifying like who they are, like how can somebody get started in understanding like what value they need to deliver with if they don't even yet have like what their mission is or what their vision or value system that they put in place. Like what are you teaching to, you know, your students and getting that established first? Because you can't lead with value supporting your mission if you don't yet have identified that.
Right. So in my 8 week, my 8 week coaching program, and this is more on the business side of coaching, week one is all about getting that clarity. It's about overcoming those limiting beliefs, poor money mindset that we're only able to get so much, like as new coaches, that this price is too high, we can't charge that or whatever. So we're kind of breaking down all those barriers that are holding us back. One of the things that I'll dive into this, and this is a great exercise for all the listeners to do who are struggling with this, is list out your 3 to 5 top values. And this is the thing here. You have to choose 3 to 5 things that you want to be constantly moving towards day in and day out. You don't have to go 5. If you have 3 strong values that you're moving towards and in day in and day out, you've got direction, right? And so then from there, it's like, okay, well, where do you want to be 1 year from today? Put that vision in place. When I was in prison, I was meditating and visualizing my future self. I had no idea what I was going to be doing, but here was my future self. He was somebody who walked with purpose. He was somebody who lived in a sense of fulfillment. He was someone who was happy. He was someone who had, I was prosperous. I had money. I had, I wasn't hurting. I was giving. I was like, I basically built a character that I wanted to be when I got out of prison. And I would visualize that day in and day out. And so you have to create your vision, and you may not know exactly what you're going to be doing. Or again, it's like, how am I going to get there? Don't worry about that. Just create the vision. So I would have you write out your vision, write out your future self story. So a year from today, write it out. I wake up, I feel like this, I'm doing this, and write it as if you're already living it. Write it as if you are already in that place. So you write out your values, write out your vision, and then from there, what's your mission? And the mission usually for coaches comes down to the I help statement. Who is it that you help? Who is it that you show up every single day for? And so what is your mission? I wake up every day and my mission is to what? And the last thing, I don't have the purpose statement in the business coaching program that I developed. It's more into my into the ROC process that I take my guys through. But the purpose statement is another huge one. And see, for a lot of people, if I ask them, hey, what's your purpose? Let's say, Eric, man, I don't know my purpose. I said, well, what is your purpose? Like, let's try to figure out what do you think your purpose is? A lot of people connect purpose to their job, to their career. No, like to me, it's like you could be home. It doesn't matter where you're at in your life. You have purpose if you decide to. My purpose every single day, my purpose is to wake up and make anybody and everybody that I come in contact with, from the store clerk to the bellman to the lady at the gym at the front desk, any and everybody I come in contact with, I want them to feel better about themselves or the world around them after they leave my presence. That's my purpose as a human being. All right. And so when you develop that, when you put that on paper and you see that, and now you start speaking that, something really special happens. A new sense of confidence that you didn't know existed is stirred up. Like a clarity that you were like, where has this been? Right? The fog kind of goes, like special things happen when you start diving into this stuff. So I would values, vision, mission, and a little bonus would be that purpose statement.
Love it. And as you're talking about that, like creating this vision and understanding that you don't yet have it figured out. And it's okay that you don't know the path to get you there, but you have to start by doing it. Just as you're saying that, it's in the back of my mind is ringing something. I know you and I have a shared mentor, Vince Del Monte, but he has a saying that he used to always drop, when I was in his group. It's like, commit now, figure the rest out later. Like you have to identify where it is you're trying to go and just say to yourself, I'm committing to it no matter what. And then have the belief and faith, you know, that ultimately like the answer is going to come to you, but it takes that daily repetition, that consistency over time. You dropped something you mentioned, about your ROC, you know, your ROC program, what you're teaching your guys. I've looked into it a little bit and, you know, I think it's consistent with kind of, you know, everything we've talked about, you know, leading up to this point. So what is the ROC? How'd you come to it? And then, you know, what is it ultimately like doing in guys' lives? Because I think that's, you know, that's the real strength is like how it's actually impacting others.
Yeah, for sure. So both my programs are foundational programs. I haven't scaled a 7-figure business yet. Mm-hmm. So I'm not teaching people how to do that. Like I would never have the audacity to come out and say like, I'm the business coach.
Yeah.
But what I recognize is that I've been able to create two foundations in my life, a foundation of personal growth and development that's allowed me to become an alpha male leading with my heart-centered mm-hmm. alpha approach. And then
Hold on, wait, real quick. I love that so much. I've never heard it phrased in that context. I've gone on other shows and I've shared online, like here I'm 6'3", I mean, 275 at my biggest, you know, as a competitive bodybuilder, but like leading with your heart, opening your heart up. So a heart-centered alpha male.
Alpha approach.
Yeah. Alpha approach. Yeah. If you're okay with it, brother, I'm stealing that one and I'm gonna use it. Yeah. Cool with that, bro. Yeah, I love it.
absolutely, man. Run with it. It's really important. And so that's how I show up for my guys. And that's the whole process. When you go through the ROC with me, which was developed in prison, this was the foundational steps that I used to transform my life in a place where most crumble. Mm. So this, we have an 85% or 80% recidivism rate, 80% of our inmates who get released from prison, go back within the first 3 years. And so to be able to create change in that place, I think is a true testimony of something that works and it's shown to be truly effective. And so I ran with it. And so developed the four steps that encompass the ROC. And that's more of like the life coaching. And that's it's a 6-week program with those four in the middle that I take my guys through. And it's all about the purpose the purpose statement that we just briefly talked about. Is it the first of the R, which is raise the bar. Mm. And it goes back to what you said, you cannot create something big if you don't believe you can. And we all have levels that we're at. If I were to ask you, hey, 1 out of 10, what's your average number? 10 is your stellar. You wake up, you knock out 100 pushups, breakfast on point. You don't hit one red light on the way to your coffee shop or your job or whatever. 10's a, you know, 1, you're waking up and you're stubbing your toe right out the gate. What's your average number for the week? What would you say? What would you say? I'm going to put you, go ahead. What would you say?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot with
this. Yeah, yeah, go ahead. What would you say? What would you say your average number is?
I would say at this moment in time, very, very recently, I was operating at like a 9, 9.5. But, you know, there's been quite a bit going on with me personally. I'd say right now I'm probably somewhere in maybe the 7, 7.5 on average. I mean, so yeah, well above kind of, you know, the middle mark, but, you know, full transparency, like I'm not, you know, living at a 10 every single day. I don't think anybody has.
The person who says a 10, I question them more than I question the person that says a 2 or a 3.
Yeah.
And when I ask this question to the kids, when I speak at, you know, I'm hearing all different numbers. There's always someone that shouts out a 2, and it's always very timid. And I kind of catch it. I'm like, honestly, and just show, here's the thing. We have a number. And if you are going to continue to operate on that number, you're going to have days that are better than that number. But guess what? You're that number. You're going to come back down to that number. You're going to have days that you operate lower than that number. But because you're a 7, you're going to figure out a way to get back to a 7. You have to raise the bar and say, I am now an 8. And you have to now take your, you have to take all the things that have been, you've been doing that you've been able to use as a 7. Those may not cut it at an 8. You have to now acknowledge what needs to be adjusted, where, what changes have to be made. You have to call yourself out for your nonsense or for where you're lacking, and then go ahead and make the adjustments and get yourself to an 8. I just ran into this myself. My organization, my structure, they were still operating at my level before I just hit this last growth phase that I just went through, which I'm so grateful for. And but now guess what? My organization, my systemization, my structure, it was still operating at the level below. And I was like, what's going on? Why am I more stressed out now than I was before? I'm in a better place. What's going on? And it was because I hadn't leveled up. I was still operating at that lower level. So I had to call myself out. I made some adjustments and now we're getting right. And so that's one of the first things that we do in the ROC process. So.
Got it. And yeah, I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm just relating it as a competitive bodybuilder, somebody that's coached a lot of men kind of in the fitness and muscle building space. I mean, that's just the concept and element and principle of progressive overload. Like if you're, you know, if you had 10 pounds of muscle in your first year of training, like you can't just replicate what you did for that year and expect to add, you know, add the same amount of muscle. Like chances are you're never going to do what you did in the first year of growth. But yeah, I mean, you have to raise your standards in the gym. You have to apply, now you have to start using maybe more advanced training techniques. You have to use other elements. You can't just increase the bar on the weight. You have to increase the workout density or, you know, increase the frequency of training that muscle. So yeah, so raising your standards, that's the R. What's step two of the ROC?
Owning your thoughts. It's pivotal. Our thoughts are going to beat us down. Our stories that we're holding on to from whatever the heck we decided to hold. I mean, like, you know, from how we were raised, how we were taught, shows, TV, music, our experiences, the pain and pleasure that we've felt in life. We have all these different things, baggage, whatever, that our subconscious mind just grabs and feeds us. We have to take ownership of those thoughts. We have to. And without it, you can raise the bar. You can get, but your thoughts can seriously beat you back down and have you, you can sabotage yourself just based on your everyday thinking if you don't get those in check.
So do you have a daily practice in place that you use for yourself or that you coach your guys to control or own those thoughts? I know there's, you know, various ways out there, but anything specific to your formula or methods on how to take ownership? Because I ultimately agree, like your thoughts can become the most powerful thing in your body or the most destructive thing. And if you don't have control of them, then it's going to lead to more of the destructive side. So what is your kind of like daily practice?
So what happens is a lot of my stuff goes back to acknowledgement. Like we have to acknowledge what is. And then from there we can change, make adjustments, tweak, or get rid of whatever we decide is the best move. But what happens is we have to acknowledge the initial thought or the story, right? The story that we're replaying over and over again, this broken record. So when we acknowledge it, there's a system that happens. Boom, thought. From thought, all of a sudden now we have an emotion. We have a feeling that gets stirred up. Then from that feeling, we have an action that we take because of it. And then from the action, we get a result. So I take my clients through this process of we recognize here's the thought from the story or here's the story that, you know, whatever the, and then here are the thoughts that come from all around it. So if you're writing a story or you believe in a story that's keeping you in one place, in one area of your life, you're going to have several thoughts that solidify this story. You're going to find thoughts that make you believe this story is a fact, that it is you, that you are this. And so we break that down. Then we recognize the feelings and emotions that come from those thoughts, that are produced because of those thoughts. We break that down. Then we recognize and acknowledge the action steps or lack of action that we've been taking in our lives because of those emotions, right? It's the system. So we and then from there, well, what are your results been? We recognize the results that come from that. Once you play that structure out and you see your system, now we can break everything down. One of the first things that I like to do is I like to show the person that this story that they've written about themselves, I like to debunk it. Mm. I like to find ways to prove that the thoughts that they're using to solidify this story as factual, I like to show them that they're actually wrong. And a lot of these thoughts are opinions, or a lot of these thoughts are actually completely misguided. They're not facts. And then the person's like, "Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess you're right. That's not actual fact. That's not 100% true. That could be. There is room for error there." And once you see that, you have this like aha moment. And then once we break that down, we move past that. Now we instill the new thoughts that serve them, because you want your stories to serve you every day. So you want to be having thoughts that serve you and not hurt you.
Got it. Yeah. And it's just like I think there's a famous quote out there somewhere along the lines. I'm probably going to, you know, mess it up a little bit, but like, what you focus on becomes your reality, like where you're placing your thoughts, where you're placing your energy on a daily basis. And I think that's why we talked about creating that vision, creating that ultimate like dream of what you're trying to accomplish. It's so important at the beginning, because then you can focus your energy and your thoughts on accomplishing and getting to that point. So, okay. So we got R, we're breaking down the rock. We got R, raise your standards, own your thoughts. So C, where do we step in with number three? What's the C?
Yeah. So C, you've used this word a couple times today, and it's consistency. Consistency beats motivation, man. At the end of the day, we're going through whatever it is that we're going through in life. We're going to get hit with resistance. We're going to get hit with challenges. We're going to face the adversity. And that's going to happen after we've already raised the bar. That's going to happen after we've already owned our thoughts. We're going to hit with now, when you start to make change, that's definitely when resistance is going to hit you. Because remember, we want to be in that comfort place. We want to be in that place that's easygoing. So when we're going after something more, you better believe resistance is coming for you. And so consistency and having structure in place, this is where your morning routines are going to come in. This is where your night routines are going to come in. This is where your prep, if health and fitness is one of the big values in your life, this is where the prep's going to come in, and taking time to make sure that there's no excuses. You got to get your meals in. You got to get your gym time in. And so maneuvering things in your life to, again, serve you. So this is where a lot of the action steps come in here, is with the consistency. So consistency in your efforts is C. And then K is know your values. And I just want to say, I know I mentioned values earlier. We don't go over any values in the R. The values that I spoke on earlier was in the 8 week.
Okay.
We're not going back to it. See, the K for when this was developed while I was in prison, for my guys here for the ROC program, this is where we actually go ahead and write out our values. This is where we get clear on who we are as men and what we're looking to do in our lives. So the raising your standards is more of the belief. We start with the belief and the process of all that. And then with the K, we're actually ending with where we start in the business coaching program. And the way I have that set up is, now this is our moral compass. So we put those values out, because when you know your values, now when something gets brought to you as an opportunity, a decision to be made, if it's not in alignment with your values, you can simply say no. Because if you raise the bar, you own your thoughts, and you're consistent in your efforts, now you're moving, right? We're going. But guess what? Distractions are going to happen. Opportunities, the shiny object for entrepreneurs. These things are going to come up to us, and we have to be careful, and we have to make sure that we're always in alignment with our values. That's what's going to keep us moving in the rate, at the rate we want to go, and in the direction that we want to go. So
incredibly powerful stuff. Yeah. I know I shared a lot on, you know, on the introduction episode of this podcast, and you know, it's what's fueling the mission. It's like for a long time, I lived without that value system in place. You know, I'd been an avid reader, deep in development, bodybuilder, trainer, coach for a long, long time. And the one thing I was, you know, I was lacking that ultimately was holding me back from living my, you know, my fullest potential was that missing value centered piece. And, you know, I found mine in Christ and, you know, in my faith and my Christianity, is what ultimately like I built my value system around. So I appreciate, you know, dropping that there at the end. I think it's so powerful. And it's so incredibly important that, you know, I'm not here to teach you what people's values need to be, what your specific ones need to be. But I think it's vitally important that you have some element of a value system in place, because without it, like you touched on, there's going to be distractions. There's going to be things that are going to pull you away from ultimately living your greatest purpose and you know, achieving, you know, what your life, you know, is created for. So awesome, brother. I appreciate you, man. And, yeah, I think, you know, kind of for, you know, for the sake of time, you know, I always try to kind of keep these, you know, within a specific family. We could go on and talk for hours and have so much. So we may have to get you on at some point. Cause I know you're doing some fitness stuff as well. We can, you know, we can talk about that maybe at a different time. But, so if somebody's interested and they like what you got to hear and they're like, you know what, Eric, the Rockets got me, you know, maybe they're a business coach out there. Like I'm going to give you the opportunity now to maybe plug a few of, you know, the things that you have going on and ultimately lead people to where they can find you. So where's Eric hanging out online? You know, we talked about social media and everything. So we're a few key places. And, you know, if you got any big things coming up that you want to drop, like here's an opportunity to kind of talk about what you got going on in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And for all listening, at the end of the day, I'm here to serve. So if it makes sense, I say take action. We may not be the best fit, but reach out and we can talk to see if I can serve you, if you own a business, if you're involved in schools and you like me to speak, you know, we can discuss that. Coaching, both options available. So Facebook is Eric Salzenstein, Eric with a K. And Instagram, just my last name is Salzenstein, Salzenstein. And my website, ericsalzenstein.com. And I mean, right now I'm excited. I haven't officially launched. So we're going back to what I was saying is those two coaching programs are the foundational. So I'm not here to say that I'm the I'm going to bring you to seven figures. Actually, one of the goals when you sign up with me for my coaching is you outgrow me as a coach. I want you to outgrow me as a coach. So I'm helping my clients where I work with my men through the Rock. I'm helping them build that foundation for them to find their heart-centered alpha approach and walk through life in that way and show up every day in that way and give them the foundation to grow on just like I built. And with the business coaching, I recognize that a lot of people are getting involved in masterminds that are just too above where they're at and they're not getting everything that they need. And so I developed this 8-week coaching program. It is the road to your first 5K month. And that's it. We're going to help you get to your first 5K month. And then after that, I want you to outgrow me. All right. And then I want you to go to the next phase. And happy to say I haven't officially launched this, but the first client that I worked with, 6K in 30 days with working with me.
Amazing.
So got him up to 6K. It was a huge win. It solidified that I'm where my heart is telling me that this is something new and I'm loving it. And so he's actually told me you're not valuing yourself high enough. So he gave me some coaching, you know, and it's coming from a humble place, but so big win there. And again, guys, I'm here to serve. So love to connect with you at the very least. Come shout me, you know, give me a DM and we can open up a conversation. So.
Well, Eric, we'll make sure to link all that up in the show notes for everybody. And I appreciate you so much for, you know, taking time out of your day today and hopping on here with me. You truly are living your purpose, and your message and everything that you're doing aligns so perfectly with the mission of this podcast to help men break free from the shackles of addiction or the shackles of prison you know, through the power of faith and fitness to ultimately fulfill their purpose in life and live a superhuman life. So one thing I've been asking all my guests, you know, prior to attending, and like I shared with you, still have no clue what I'm doing with this podcast thing. So hopefully
it's a growing thing, man. You gotta
hopefully
love it.
I know we deliver some value, and I know that this show is going to be super impactful and really help and change people's lives. But, you know, I truly believe that every single one of us was created for a very specific purpose. And when we have the ability to harness that faith or belief and then combine it with the control over our physical or of our body, then we can ultimately create our own dream life or, you know, live, you know, the life that we were, you know, destined to live. But as we're wrapping up here, how would Eric Salzelstein, Salzelstein, apologize
Salzin,
for that.
Salzenstein.
How would Eric define living a superhuman life?
Showing up every day wholeheartedly in your uniqueness and boldness and looking to serve others. I think that touches on the individual side of things, and then it touches on the community aspect that our world needs so much of just helping other people. So I think those two aspects come together, superhuman right there.
Amazing. Incredible. Spoken like a heart-centered alpha.
You got it.
I appreciate you, brother. I love you for jumping on here. Yeah, guys, man. If you found value in this episode or any of our episodes, what you can do to pay us back. Obviously, this podcast is 100% free. There's no advertisements. There's no way that we're monetizing this. It's truly mission-driven. We're trying to help and impact the world, and we can use your help in doing that. So if you found value in the episode today, do us two things. Make sure to share the episode with one other person that you know that can also benefit from it. And one thing to help us grow the podcast, grow the reach, help us tap into that iTunes algorithm. Speaking from a digital marketer here, I know how things work. So help us with the algorithm. Leave us a rating, leave us a review, only if you found value. You know, if you didn't, let us know that as well. You can send me a DM. But guys, we appreciate you so much for tuning in. We love you all. Thank you, Eric, once again for joining us today. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening. Frank Ritz signing off here, The Superhuman Life. Love you guys.